Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to yet another edition of the Midwest Hemp Council Weekly Podcast, brought to you by the Bose Public Affairs Group at Bose, McKinney & Evans. I'm your host, Jason Dozier. Thanks again for joining us this week. On today's podcast, we'll hear from Courtney Moran, Chief Legislative Strategist for Agricultural Hemp Solutions. We'll also hear once again from Midwest Hemp Council President and Vice President of Bose Public Affairs Group of Council at Bose, McKinney and Evans, Justin Swanson, who will talk about the Indiana House and Senate hemp-related legislation working its way through the Indiana State House this week. And as promised, we begin the program with Courtney Moran, Chief Legislative Strategist for Agricultural Hemp Solutions. Courtney, how you doing? And thanks for being on the program with us this week.
Oh, thank you so much, Jason. Wonderful to be here.
And before we get into the nuts and bolts of this, tell us why you are where you're at right now. We can kind of hear some noise in the background, but I know you're busy working. Where are you and what's going on there?
Yes, I am actually at the Hemp and CBD Connect show here in Portland, Oregon. And my Farmers Association, Oregon Industrial Hemp Farmers Association, has a booth here at this event, but I was also one of the featured speakers yesterday right after Bill Richmond from the USDA gave an update on the USDA interim final rules.
Oh, great. And how's the attendance out there?
Oh, it is fantastic. Both Bill and I had a jam-packed room with standing room only for our presentation. So it's been a really good turnout today.
Yeah, and it's great to go to an expo no matter where you go. We have several here in the Midwest, of course, and to see all the people that are enthusiastic and there and want to learn, they want to get educated, and that really is a strong sign that that hemp does have a future here in the United States.
Oh, absolutely. It is honestly just pretty incredible and amazing to see how many people are engaged and involved in the industry. And having been in this industry for so many years, just to see the incredible growth that we're seeing every single year, it's absolutely fantastic.
And Courtney, right now, again, you're on the West Coast. I know that you're from the Midwest. Is it Minnesota, Wisconsin?
I was born and raised in Wisconsin, but I went to law school in Minnesota, so you got both of them.
And as soon as you said Wisconsin, that accent came right back. But tell us this, then. How did you get involved in hemp? What was the catalyst? What got you involved to the point of working with legislatures and getting the farm bills passed? When did you get involved, and what got you involved?
Well, I first became very interested and intrigued about hemp actually in 2008 when I was a senior in college. I was given the book The Emperor Wears No Clothes by Jack Herer, and I could not believe what I was reading. You know, this plant that I had, you know, been told through the DARE program in elementary and middle school and high school was so dangerous, could actually clean up toxins out of the soil and produce thousands of sustainable products. I couldn't stand for it. I couldn't believe it. Mm-hmm. And when I went to law school, I actually interned for National Normal. And when I was there, that was in 2010, and we were working on a lot of the medical marijuana initiatives, I was always very passionate about hemp and what it could do for the environment and mm-hmm. for the earth. Mm-hmm. And so after I passed the bar in Oregon back in 2011, I really just started advocating as much as I could. And that actually led me to going back to school to get our Master of Laws in Environmental and Natural Resources Law and focus that whole program on industrial hemp law before there really even was hemp law. And coincidentally or not, at the time, Oregon State University offered the world's first industrial hemp university course.
Ah, perfect,
it was taught
perfect
by
timing.
Andrea Herman, right? And so I took that course at the same time that I was taking my Master of Laws program. Mm-hmm. And as soon as I had graduated from that Master of Laws program, I just started, you know, very openly advocating and communicating about hemp. And I had been working with the Oregon Department of Agriculture, pushing them to create a hemp program in Oregon, reaching out to the Oregon delegation. I hosted my first Hemp History Week event back in 2014 and really just started there. And in 2014, I pushed the Department of Agriculture to start the Oregon Hemp Program and actually applied to the Department of Agriculture on behalf of an Eastern Oregon farmer for them to give him a license to grow. Mm-hmm. And the only reason they denied our application is because they didn't have rules in place to set up a program. They put me on the advisory committee, and within a few months, we had rules finalized, and by February 2nd of 2015, we had the first license issued in Oregon.
Oh, fantastic. Now, the interest in hemp, like now you're talking about, you're literally standing at an expo, at an educational event there with hundreds of people there. Back in 2015, how many people that you knew and even knew what hemp was?
Only a few. There were only 13 farmers licensed in the hemp programs. And actually, two of them gave their licenses back to the Department of Agriculture because of issues in the state with seed sourcing and with cross-pollination concerns. And there was actually an attempt by the marijuana industry in Oregon to shut down the Oregon hemp program in 2015 before we had even gotten it up and running. And just as, you know, a citizen advocate, I was, you know, I care about this plant. I believe in this plant and what it can do. And so I just was incessantly reaching out to the Oregon legislature to let them understand what hemp is, what it isn't, you know, what true cross-pollination concerns are. Mm-hmm. And it caught the attention of Representative Carl Wilson and the House Majority Leader at the time, Val Hoyle. And so they actually invited me down to the Capitol to testify on one of the bills. And while I was in the room testifying, one of those original licensees was in the room. And after I testified, he and I talked, and then he hired me as his lobbyist on the spot.
Oh, wow.
And so, so that's actually how I started lobbying for hemp. And we were able to shut that bill down, House Bill 2668, and the farmers were able to grow in Oregon in 2015. But by August, we saw that the regulatory framework that was in place was not working for the farmers and would not really allow the industry to thrive in Oregon. Mm-hmm. So we created the Oregon Industrial Hemp Farmers Association and organized the industry and began to advocate on their behalf. And we went back to the legislature with about five different goals that we hoped to achieve during the short session. And in a 4.5 week short session in Oregon in 2016, we passed one of the most comprehensive hemp bills to that date. And we expanded the Oregon hemp program exponentially. And, you know, just seeing the work that I had done on that legislation, it really kind of caught the attention of folks around the country. And so I just started working on legislation in a lot of different states. Mm-hmm. And that eventually led to, you know, legalizing hemp and creating comprehensive pilot programs in those states, and then led to my drafting of the Federal Hemp Farming Act of 2018.
Well, that's certainly amazing. I think history, especially the history of hemp, will certainly include the name Courtney Moran, among other folks. But it's amazing that right now we kind of almost take it for granted that it is an industry and it is happening. And even though everybody's learning, you know, every now and then we got to step back and think there are some key people that were involved in actually making this happen, that were they not involved, we may have, you know, been set back a few years or who knows how long. And again, you obviously, with you out there with Jamie Campbell Petty, so many people, of course, you could start naming names that get involved, but it is great to have folks like you that have been just passionately involved and literally made this happen.
Thank you for that, Jason. It's really been an honor to be able to speak for this plant. And, you know, like I said, there's been 80 years of prohibition. There has been so much fear put around this plant for so many different reasons. And what we really need to be focusing on is on educating the public about all of the incredible benefits that it can provide to the earth, to our environment, and to all of its inhabitants.
And Courtney, you worked with the offices of the Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, also with Senator Ron Wyden, on drafting the 2018 Farm Bill. So you were in there from at that point, of course, well before that. Tell us real quick, or kind of in a nutshell, what that was all about, and that must have been very interesting working with Mitch McConnell, those folks, and making that farm bill happen.
Absolutely. Yeah, actually, we started drafting the language for the 2018 farm bill, which was actually originally in the Hemp Farming Act of 2018, back in very early 2017. We started the discussions really in fall of 2016 and then started the drafting in 2017. And, you know, we went back between our two offices, or the two offices of Thunder Ron White and Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, draft after draft after draft. You know, we spoke with numerous members on both the House and Senate side. And, you know, it was pretty amazing to see the collaboration happening, not only between, you know, a Republican and a Senate, a Republican senator and a Democratic senator, but to see the collaboration with all of the different committees, as well as with the USDA and the Department of Justice in creating this legislation that actually moved forward and finally legalized hemp.
And of course, Mitch McConnell from Kentucky, one of the forerunners with hemp here in the United States. Do you think, is it possible that if Mitch McConnell was not involved, would that 2018 Farm Bill had been that positive for hemp?
You know, that is a really good question. You know, as Senate Majority Leader, he has incredible political power, but also his role on the Senate Agriculture Committee really secured the ability to have the Hemp Farming Act language included in the 2018 Farm Bill. And so it's important to know that Senator Wyden had actually sponsored Hemp Farming Acts four times before the 2018 Hemp Farming Act. So that was the fifth Hemp Farming Act on the Senate side. Mm-hmm. And the previous iterations on the Senate side were actually very short. They really just removed hemp from the definition of marijuana in the Controlled Substances Act. But this was the first time on the Senate side that there was a very comprehensive bill that actually laid out a framework for how it would be regulated and different enforcement mechanisms.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for your work in making all that come together, because, of course, the politicians, most of them were not involved in hemp, didn't know what hemp was, had a negative connotation. And it was folks like you and, of course, Jamie Campbell Petty here from Indiana, a lot of folks around the country that made the lawmakers aware, you know, exactly, you know, what hemp was and how good it can be for citizens here. But let's a lot of topics we need to get to.
Let me interject, because that is such a true statement. You know, when we were going around, you know, all the different members of the industry were advocating in all their different states. But when I was going around to different offices in D.C., you know, you'd walk into the offices and sometimes you'd say the word hemp and they couldn't even believe that you'd say the word in their office, let alone, you know, try to start discussing policy. And so really just educating them of what hemp is, what hemp isn't, you know, that we're not here to talk about marijuana, that we're here to talk about agriculture and farming and the different economic benefits that are available. It was a lot of education, but it's very exciting to see where not only our federal Congress has come, but where all these different state legislators have come, you know, and being able to see that this is an incredible opportunity, that this is agriculture, and this is something that we can do to support our farmers here domestically.
Yeah, and again, obviously, as we said, a lot of those politicians, it wasn't that they were against hemp or are against hemp. They just don't quite understand what it is, why it's there, and what it's good for. So again, the education is certainly ongoing and needs to be there. And again, with folks like you out there doing it, it's certainly moving forward. And so Courtney, talk about, you're the chief legislative strategist for Agricultural Hemp Solutions. Tell us what Agricultural Hemp Solutions is all about.
Yes, Agricultural Hemp Solutions was formed back in 2017. We are a government relations all-inclusive firm. We have worked on legislation in several different states that have actually set up the comprehensive pilot programs in those states and legalized hemp in those states. And on a federal level, we have just recently launched a federal lobbying campaign to actually address the issues that we are all seeing with the USDA interim final rules, but also to lobby Congress to pass subsequent legislation to ensure that we have a science-based definition and regulatory framework to continue the advancement of our industry.
Okay, and so how does that? How much time do you spend with that? I know you're involved in a lot of other things. Is that the main thing that you're doing right now?
That will be the main thing that I'm doing, depending upon how many folks sign up for the campaign. You know, this is something that I cannot do alone, and that we need the support of the national industry from. And so this campaign has just been launched, and we are looking for folks from all over the country to sign on to support these changes that are desperately needed on a federal level.
And how can they get a hold of you to show that support and help out?
Yes, they can reach out to me directly at Courtney@agriculturalhempsolutions.com. They can go right to agriculturalhempsolutions.com to learn about the work that we have been doing over the past several years, and could also call 888-388-HEMP.
Okay.
4367.
Okay, yeah. Fantastic. And again, we're speaking with Courtney Moran. Courtney is the chief legislative strategist, as I said, for Agricultural Hemp Solutions. She's in Portland, Oregon right now at a hemp function, so that's the noise you hear there in the background. But again, we really appreciate you taking the time to step away there and talk with us. Right now, something I know you're involved in is spearheading the 1% THC levels for hemp. Right now, we're looking at 0.3%. You want to get that raised to 1%. Or tell us what that is all about and your involvement with that.
Yes, absolutely. That is really what I am focusing on when I talk about science-based federal legislation and the science-based definition for hemp. Multiple scientific studies have shown that the intoxication threshold in cannabis is actually at a 1% THC threshold. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we all know that the 0.3% THC concentration is an arbitrary number. It was derived from a study from 1976, which basically explained that at a 0.3% level, there is no ability for intoxication. And unfortunately, you know, that one clause in that research study was carried out through policy internationally, you know, in Canada, several different countries in the European Union, and now in the United States. But we all know that this plant has a natural tendency to increase THC above the 0.3%, but not really above the 1%, because that is its natural intoxication threshold. Mm-hmm. And the natural genetics of the plant. And so we want to be supporting agriculture. We should be treating hemp farmers just like every other farmer and traditional agriculture. And we should not be subjecting farmers to having their crops burned and destroyed because the policy has been set at an arbitrary threshold. And so I am advocating that we change the definition for hemp to that scientific-based threshold of 1% THC.
And Courtney, do you know where they picked up the 0.3% in the first place?
Yeah, it was a scientific study in 1976 by Dr. Ernest Small.
Oh, wow. So they're using over a 30-year-old or 40-year-old document.
Yes.
Wow. So again, obviously, we have faith, Courtney, that you're going to get in there with a lot of people that care about this and make a difference and make that change happen.
Yes, 100%. The more support, the better. You know, the more support we have, the louder our voices. And it's very important for folks to get involved. Now, just yesterday, the USDA comments closed on the interim final rule, and there were over 4,600 comments submitted, which I am so grateful to see, because the day before there were about 2,700 comments in. And so on that last day, you know, we had almost 2,000 additional comments submitted to USDA. But it's so critical that people get involved and join the campaign, because it really takes every single one of us to build this industry and to create the regulatory framework that we're going to be seeing. And it's very important for people to understand that, you know, while yes, hemp is legal now, we just overcame 80 years of prohibition. And there is still a lot of work to do, but that the regulatory framework that's being set up today is how this industry is going to be regulated long term. And so we have this incredible opportunity between the issuance of these interim final rules back on October 31st of 2019 until the issuance of the final rules, to really, you know, educate USDA, educate DEA, continue to advocate and lobby Congress to set up a framework that is going to be sustainable long term and what we all want to see this industry to look like and to be regulated like in the future.
And it is great that they've opened up to accept those comments, because again, it kind of goes back around full circle, as we were talking earlier and you just mentioned. These politicians, they're not out there farming right now. They're not involved in the agriculture business, actually touching the soil. So it does take the rank and file out there to get that information out. And at least they were certainly open to take that information. And Courtney, do you have any idea how long it'll take them to go through those the over 4,000 comments?
You know, there isn't a specific timeline for when they have to have the comments reviewed, but what there is a sunset on the interim final rules. And so those interim final rules have a 2-year sunset. So that's October 31st of 2021. Mm-hmm. And so by that date, USDA has to have final rules published.
Okay. Thanks for that information. And again, we're speaking with Courtney Moran, Chief Legislative Strategist for Agricultural Hemp Solutions. Courtney, again, thanks so much for taking the time out of the expo there to talk with us. It's been a great conversation. Is there anything else that you wanted to touch on before we let you go?
I just want to say how grateful I am to be in this industry and for how excited I am to see the future of this industry. You know, we've grown from only a few states participating in the pilot programs with only a handful of farmers in those few states to, you know, currently 47 states that have legalized hemp with thousands of farmers growing in each of those states. And I can only imagine that we're going to see absolutely incredible things as this industry continues to evolve, and not only for the benefit of all of the industry participants, but for the earth and all of its inhabitants.
Absolutely. Once again, it's been great having you on the program, Courtney, and I certainly hope we can talk to you in the future.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Jason.
All right, as we continue our conversation this week, we speak with Justin Swanson, Midwest Hemp Council President. Justin's also the Vice President of Bose Public Affairs Group of Council at Bose, McKinney & Evans. Justin, how you doing today?
I'm great, Jason. It's almost Friday.
It's almost Friday. We're almost there. Let's keep pushing, and we will get there together. So a couple things that, as I said, we needed to get to here. The deadline last night ended. The USDA interim final rule, the comment period, ended last night at midnight. Talk about that and where you think this is headed.
So I think initially we were all, I think, a little nervous on the lack of public input on the rule. But I checked last night, and I think we hit just over 3,500 comments submitted.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So we had some really good engagement from the industry, which is exactly what we need. And I think everyone who's been in this industry for a while understands that the only way we're going to be successful as a group is if we continue to engage our lawmakers and the regulators to make sure, you know, we have farmer-friendly regulations, you know, that also maintain the integrity of the hemp market. So we're very pleased with that, and we're looking forward to seeing what kind of changes USDA will or will not make.
And with that many comments, do you have any idea what was there a particular topic that a majority of those comments covered?
Yeah, so I unfortunately didn't have time to read all the comments, but I think there's a general consensus, you know, not only among the industry, but also from lawmakers, you know, that the harvest window is too short. These testing requirements are too strict, you know, and doesn't provide farmers with enough options to be successful. Delta 9 testing was a big issue. That was part of Congressman Baird and Senator Braun's letter. And then also the negligence threshold. I think we're all pretty common topics to hit on, which reflected Midwest Hemp Council's infographic we put out pretty early on.
Now, let's move on. Right now, the State House, a lot of happenings going on. We've got a couple bills to talk about. The first one will be Senate Bill 335. This deals with the transportation of hemp across state lines. Is that correct? And is there other items it deals with?
Yeah, so it's about 120-page plus piece of legislation, and we are a small part of that. And so in theory and in practice, it is a really big win, because it's the state of Indiana recognizing that they do not have the authority to interfere with the interstate transportation of hemp and hemp products. Mm-hmm. So while it's good for out-of-state companies and farmers, you know, they don't have to fear shipping their products through Indiana, which, you know, is the crossroads of America.
Sure.
We are advocating, let's take this the whole way and make sure we take care of Hoosier small businesses and Hoosier farmers and give them access to the same market we're allowing to flow through our state.
And does this point out any sort of method for the drivers to go through when they, let's say if they are pulled over, the officer has to decide whether it's hemp or marijuana, that sort of situation? Are there guidelines there, or how does that work?
So in the statute, no, there's not, but our emergency rules have some specific guidelines on people who do transport hemp. But I'll say it's, you know, the people who do it right understand how to do it right. Mm-hmm. You know, have all your paperwork in line, your COAs, your bill of lading, you know, and ultimately this is really, I think people forget, you know, police officers operate on discretion. And, you know, if you, you know, you're not sweating and nervous, you know, that kind of thing, I think it'll be pretty good. I don't think Indiana's, you know, really willing to, or wanting to, really interfere with that market.
Gotcha. And let's stay, let's move over to the House side of things. House Bill 1293. This talks about smokable hemp. Elaborate on what that bill means.
So that's a good question. And thanks for lumping these together, because they essentially do the same thing, just with different words. Mm-hmm. So 1293 is, again, allowing these products to flow through our state, but do not take care of who's your farmers and who's your small businesses here in the state.
Okay.
And the way that bill was introduced actually declared craft hemp flower a threat to public health and safety.
because we know it is, of course.
Yeah. So we were able to get that removed in committee. So we thank Chairman Torr for that amendment on the fly to get rid of that language. So, you know, it's kind of a nuanced position, but it is a win for the industry as a whole in the Midwest, again, because you're not going to have to avoid Indiana, mm-hmm. When you're shipping your products or transporting it. And we're not going to give up. In fact, there's actually a second reading amendment today. I believe Representative Eberhardt's going to offer on 1293 that'll essentially strike that whole smokable hemp ban and criminalizing part of the plant. So it'll be really interesting to see how the House responds to that amendment today.
And is there any opposition to this bill, or does it look like it should be fairly safe to say it will pass?
There's certainly going to be opposition if Representative Eberhardt is successful on including his amendment mm-hmm. Today. There will certainly be opposition over on the Senate side.
What would the opposition be? What would their argument be?
Well, it's unfortunately still just, you know, this is marijuana, and it's too hard on our law enforcement officers to tell a difference. And, you know, as Judge Barker, you know, made the comment in her ruling for the injunction, you know, just because it's inconvenient for law enforcement doesn't, you know, provide you the right to pass an unconstitutional statute.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not to mention these, you know, Virginia, they just bought over 16,000 roadside test kits that will distinguish hemp from marijuana, basically based on the ratio of CBD to THC. So the free market's going to develop these solutions, and really all we're asking for is not, you know, not to shut our farmers and small businesses out of the most lucrative market right now in the hemp industry.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. All right, let's move over to back to the Senate side of things. Senate Bill 397, this talks about low THC hemp extract. Talk about that bill and what that means for the farmers out there.
Yeah, so this was a really interesting bill, and it was an attempt to give the Alcohol and Tobacco Commission authority to regulate essentially sellers and distributors and wholesalers of low THC hemp products. Had a hefty fee on there for the license, and it also gave the ATC carte blanche to develop rules on this. Mm-hmm. And so it was a little, you know, from a philosophical standpoint, I don't think anyone in the hemp industry wants to be associated or lumped in with, you know, highly addictive products, you know, like cigarettes or alcohol. So we did testify against it and provided the committee with a really good brief rundown of the 6-year evolution of hemp policy here in Indiana, and discussed that, you know, the Indiana Hemp Advisory Committee with all the stakeholders involved just came out after 6 months of working on it with our emergency rules. So the timing wasn't right. But I have a feeling that next session, we're going to be seeing more efforts to figure out who exactly is responsible for products on the market and who's regulating it.
And where do you expect this bill to go? What kind of opposition does it have, or what type of conversation is there about Senate Bill 397?
Yesterday was the Senate committee deadline, so if bills didn't get out of committee yesterday, they're dead for session. And the committee elected not to take a vote on the bill. So it is officially dead for session, which is a really big win, again, for hemp here in Indiana.
Okay, so that is a positive.
Yes, yeah, and it also attempted to ban putting CBD in food products. So essentially trying to codify in state law what FDA's position is currently, which I think everyone knows is going to change. It's just a matter of when.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the chairman of the Ag Committee out in D.C. just introduced a bill last year that set out the parameters for FDA to – it basically creates an exception for lack of better words, it makes FDA treat it like a dietary supplement.
Is that law now, or is that something that also has to be passed?
That's got to go through the federal process out in Congress.
Okay,
but it's a good sign. They're still trying to get FDA to act on this and give people who want to do it right clear guidance on how to do it right.
All right, now, and so those are the three big bills we wanted to talk about. Is there anything the average person out there, the average hemp supporter, can do to help these bills, or is it a matter of sitting back, waiting, and hoping?
No, I mean, you got to, again, as I mentioned, even with the USDA comments, I mean, the industry has to engage, and they have to engage in a respectful and knowledgeable manner. Keep in mind, here in Indiana, we're a part-time civil legislature, and don't assume the legislators have any idea what you're talking about. So there's over almost 1,000 bills filed this session.
Sure.
And, you know, it's pretty common when you have a bill you're working on, it's the most important thing in the state house that's going on. And that's definitely not true, right? You kind of get in your a narrow focus, and you have to understand that there's definitely other things going on.
Right.
And just always be respectful and ask them to continue to support, you know, the growing hemp industry here in Indiana.
All right. Anything else we can add, Justin?
So next week is officially the halftime. So House bills that got out of the House will go over to the Senate and restart the process, and vice versa. So the bills switch chambers. The lawmakers will go home for a couple of days next week. So I think you can audibly hear the collective sigh of relief as the lawmakers kind of take a break for a little bit.
And then how long does that second session last?
We are still on schedule to get done with session on March 11th. So this has been one of the most fast-paced sessions I've been involved with personally. For example, on Tuesday, there was 21 bills in one committee being heard, mm-hmm. which I think set a record. So they're all, again, these deadlines serve a purpose, and it's to get the legislators moving and bills through the process.
And Justin, when would you expect to be back with us to give updates? And in other words, when will there be updates on these three bills that we discussed?
So next week they'll either be voted up or voted down, basically. And I'm talking specifically about House Bill 1293, which I think the entire industry, at least in Indiana, needs to engage on and ask your senators and representatives to support support repealing that ban on smokable hemp or craft hemp flower. So next week, I'm happy to jump on again and let you know where they are.
Well, we'll certainly be looking forward to it. And once again, it's Justin Swanson, Midwest Hemp Council President. Justin's also the Vice President of Bose Public Affairs Group of Council at Bose, McKinney & Evans, and obviously keeps us updated and in the know on what's happening down at the State House. And Justin, as always, we do appreciate it.
Yes, thank you for your time, Jason.
And that's going to do it for our show this week. Thanks for joining, and thanks for listening. The Midwest Hemp Council Weekly Podcast is brought to you by the Bose Public Affairs Group at Bose, McKinney & Evans. You can find more information about the Midwest Hemp Council, as well as our entire catalog of podcasts, on our website, MidwestHempCouncil.com. I'm your host, Jason Dozier. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll be back next week with more. So long, everybody.